All right, my name is Wade Wagner. I'm here with Karandeep Anand. Karan, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Wade, for having me here first. And I'm Karandeep Anand, in short, Karan. I've been with Microsoft for a little over 8 years now. And my background's primarily been in the System Center, IT Pro space. Of course, done my stints in the usual journey from Windows client, Windows Server, to storage, to SQL, to System Center. And for almost a year now, I've been with the App Fabric.
Okay. All right. So with the App Fabric server group, so Windows Server App Fabric. So tell us a little bit about that and what you worked on when you were on that.
Right. Actually, till last year, we had fairly distinct offerings. One was Windows Server App Fabric, and the other one was the Azure App Fabric.
Right.
And the Windows Server App Fabric is what I was initially working on, and in particular, the caching piece of that.
So Windows Server App Fabric included a caching service, so it was codenamed Velocity.
Yes.
One of the greatest code names I think we've ever had. It also provided hosts and management capabilities and monitoring and so forth.
That was codenamed Dublin back.
Dublin, yep. And so that would be for workflows and WCS services and so forth.
Right.
Right. So that was released earlier this year. Was that March?
We announced that back in July at TechEd.
July. Okay.
That's when both Velocity and Dublin came to life with Windows Server App Fabric.
Gotcha. And so those are products and technologies that people can and are using today. And so on the Windows Azure App Fabric side, we've had two services today. We've had the Service Bus and Access Control Service, and just recently announced the caching service as well.
Yes, actually, we were very happy to finally release the CDP version of caching in Azure. Mm-hmm. So customers who've been using caching solutions on-premises, especially Windows Server App Fabric caching, can now actually use the same set of capabilities in Azure as well.
Right, so the caching that we know from Windows Server App Fabric is basically you guys have made available as a service in Windows Azure.
Yes, and that's been our intent all along, that when we announced Windows Server App Fabric, we wanted to take the capabilities between what's available in server and what's available in cloud, and actually bring parity between the two sets. So this is our first attempt to bring what was available with caching to the Azure customers with Windows Azure App Fabric.
Gotcha. So when I think about it from a development perspective, what's changed? What's different? If I'm familiar with building an application using Windows Server App Fabric cache, how has this changed when I'm now leveraging it as a service in Windows Azure?
I think we should split that into two parts. One is from a developer perspective. Our goal is nothing changes.
In fact,
our ambition is that even the code that you have should just work as is. But you know, the goal being, as a developer, you learn the caching concepts once, and then just apply as is to whether you're developing on-premises or in Azure, and that should remain always symmetric. On the IT Pro side, that's where the big difference is. On the server, you actually have components and technology that you have to manage yourself.
Right.
With Azure, Azure being a PaaS platform, we want to offer higher-level services as opposed to having to manage servers. So that's a big difference where you don't manage cache clusters, how to configure high availability, you know, how many machines they need, capacity planning. You don't have to worry about any of that.
Mm-hmm.
We do that for you. And what you get as a developer is the same constructs to use in your application as caching.
That's great. So let me see if I can recap that. So I can build my applications the same way in terms of, you know, from the development experience. And I don't actually have to set everything up in advance and spend all that time actually, you know, having, you know, provisioning the servers, you know, clusters and so forth. Everything's managed for me.
Correct. And that management overhead is where, you know, people spend most of their time in managing the application, and that pain we take away.
Gotcha. So we've got three services now on Windows Azure App Fabric. And this caching service, tell me about, you know, like provisioning and so forth. Is it going to be consistent with the way things work today with Service Bus and Access Control? Will there be changes?
Right. Actually, when you try out the CDP release today, you'll see a very familiar experience in how I go provision, how do I go set it up. And in fact, it's the same portal experience that you see today with Service Bus. Of course, there are some constructs which are very specific to cache, like,
right,
hey, I need a cache endpoint, or I need a cache size. And those are things which we see as being unique to each service we offer within App Fabric. But the general concept being, I need to buy, provision, and pay for an App Fabric service, those concepts remain the same.
Gotcha. And so you mentioned an endpoint, so a cache endpoint. For Windows Server App Fabric cache, it's what, NetTCP and port 22233,
right?
Do those things stay the same when it comes to the caching
service? They actually still do.
Okay.
It's just that the version of the client that you would use for your Azure solution would actually have a logic to translate that into the endpoint in Azure to talk to.
Gotcha.
But from your developer perspective, that doesn't really change much.
So if I a scenario, if I have an ASP.NET application today that's leveraging Windows Server App Fabric cache on premises, I should theoretically be able to just switch that configuration setting, that endpoint in the web config.
Absolutely.
And for the most part, it should just
that's the whole intent then. You don't have to worry about when you're writing code, what are you, or where are you going to run that code? That's the general intent and the architecture direction we want to go down.
Right.
You write code once, and with little configuration changes as possible, you can move the code between on-premises and Azure. Of course, with caching, we were able to realize that goal pretty quickly, but I'm hoping that we can remain that consistent that way going forward.
So now that I have this service available, which is fabulous, right? To be able to actually have a caching service available in Windows Azure, I think is wonderful. What do you think some of the different ways in which developers and customers are going to actually use the service? What are some of the scenarios you guys are targeting, thinking about?
Instead of trying to wave my hands, I'll probably actually move to the whiteboard at this point and just break down the top scenarios that we see.
Fabulous. That's great.
Cases. Yep. So one of the primary use cases that we see for AppFabric, Azure AppFabric caching is that you should be able to start using this right out of the box without writing a lot of code. So one of the things we've done is for ASP.NET, we've enabled two core scenarios. One we call the session state provider, and the second one is the output cache. Now, if you're familiar with ASP.NET programming today, you see, you can use session state in memory today, or you can externalize that to SQL. So what we've done in conjunction with the ASP.NET team, we're releasing a session state implementation and an output cache implementation so that you can start using these two with only a config change and start using cache out of the box. So for these two, no core changes. You just switch the config to say, instead of using inprop, I'm going to use the cache provider. Of course, you do need to link to the cache DLL. That's the only reference you make to the project. And other than that, a config switch allows you to start using session state and output.
So I'm building an ASP.NET website today. Without changing my app at all, update a couple of things in config, add some assemblies to reference them, and I can start leveraging the caching solution.
Right away.
And
let's see how this benefits you. So today, I'm sure you're familiar with what the session state is, but if you have a bunch of web front ends, and let's take a simple example where you have a shopping cart, and a lot of different users are hitting the website, and this is your load balancer in Azure. They would get hit, and the request would get sprayed across these different web front ends. Now, one of the challenges is when you want to scale out a web tier, you need to have state which is available with per box to be available centrally, so that the state can be shared across these different web front ends. And this is a very, very classic pattern, not just for session state, but for pretty much any reference data that you would want to access from multiple machines. So this is where session state comes in handy, which is you can, instead of keeping the session state per box, you can actually externalize that and keep it in the cache tier. So think of this as the cache endpoint that you just got from AppFabric caching, and start externalizing this and keep it in this common distributed cache. Two big benefits. One, all machines can access the same shared state. More importantly, if one of these boxes was to go down, you don't lose the session state, so your shopping cart just doesn't disappear on you immediately. You actually have that available on as a distributed cache here. So this is a classic scenario for using session state or a distributor in memory with that fabric caching.
Another thing occurs to me that I think you're moving to also is sticky sessions in Windows Azure is pretty tough, right?
Yes.
If I'm using in proc memory on each of these boxes, through the load balancer, it's hard to guarantee that a user is going to end up going all, it's always back to the same web role.
That's a good one, actually. So one of the things that happens in the design to scale it up, the load balancers have to keep spraying requests to different front ends. And that's a great way for you to have low cost and yet scale up. But the challenge is that in that case, any state which is kept per machine, you need to write the logic to be able to share the state between them, with these machines. With using a cache tier, where you externalize the state, this problem goes away because the cache tier does that for you when the state's shared. And all the logic of being distributed, highly available for the cache tier, accrues value to your web tier immediately. So that's one use case. The primary use case that we see is people starting out of the box without having to worry about learning a new paradigm of programming or any new fancy code. One of the other ones, I'm going to erase this real quick. The second key scenario that we see is, you know, most people in applications have reference data.
Right.
And, you know, this could be, think of this again as a web front end serving a whole bunch of data from either a SQL as a database, or it could actually be hitting an XTOR blob or an XTOR table. But what's really happening in this case is you're always reading data from disk. And that's a very traditional problem of speed when you really need to scale it up. I love to draw this triangle all the time. The fastest, of course, is your memory.
Yep.
Next comes the network, and then comes the disk. And every time you want to, you hit disk, you're paying a fairly high latency on an application to be able to access that data and serve it. So what we help is we move the read logic or the frequently accessed data from the disk, of course, over network because this is a separate tier, and start giving you at best the network latencies, and with the near cache or the local cache capabilities of Azure, Fabric caching, you get both the memory latencies, which is with the local cache, and with the distributed cache, you get at worst the network latencies, but you never have to hit disk.
So let's drill into this a little bit because I was shocked when I saw the value of the local cache. So what exactly is local cache? What's happening when we're using local cache?
So let's build on this example a little further. Let's assume I'm reading 10,000 rows or 1,000 rows from a SQL database. Mm-hmm. And if I introduce cache in between my database and my front ends, one of the things I can do is I can store these 1,000 records in my distributed cache.
Yep.
So that if multiple front ends need to access this cache, they all have access to these 1,000 objects. However, if you have even more frequently accessed data, for example, if your node 1 is doing more computation or it's a web shopping cart and you're reading, let's say, my top selling items,
yep.
You don't even need to hit the distributed cache. The cache client actually allocates a very small piece of memory from your web role, so this is web, and if you enable local cache, this will get hard to read at this point.
Yeah.
but the point being, there is some memory allocated on the local box,
yep.
So that instead of for very frequently accessed items, you can restrict this to say only 100 items at best,
gotcha.
Or 10 items. For those 100 or 10 items, you don't need to hit the distributed cache at all. It will read from the local cache. If it doesn't find it, of course, it can always go to distributed
yep.
cache. And if it's not even the distributed cache, that's the only time you actually go hit the disk. I'll give you some numbers. A simple test app that we put out. I think it's cache demo.cloudapp.net. This illustrates the fact that, HTTP, the value prop of the three different caches. So if you enable cache, you see, even if you're reading from a highly optimized store like SQL Azure or XTOR, you see a latency of, about 10 to 15 milliseconds.
Yep.
And you keep refreshing, SQL's, Azure's very smart to cache it, but because you hit disk every once in a while, you hit about 15 millisecond latency.
So whenever I'm calling back directly to SQL Azure, I see 10,
yes.
15 milliseconds.
See, about approximately 15 millisecond latency. And it's not just about latency, it's about the fact that because you are, I lost my chain of thought.
No worries.
Yes, so it's not just the fact that it's latency, it's the fact that if I have a lot of connections coming to my SQL Azure,
yes.
It's very difficult to scale up because you cannot add a lot of SQL Azure databases.
And then you start getting into the challenges of horizontally partitioning
yes.
your SQL Azure databases,
yes.
which you can absolutely do, but that does require additional work,
and
thinking about how you have to partition and design that database
Correct.
To scale horizontally.
Okay. So, and at some point, because of so many requests, you would have to eventually hit disk, and then,
yep.
you 15 milliseconds in a steady state is pretty novel. Instead, when you start using distributed cache with fabric caching, you can see an average latency of 5 to 10 milliseconds. And the good thing is, regardless of how many clients start coming in, it does not, performance does not degrade as much as it would just because you're hitting a disk-based store.
Right.
However, if you start using the local cache as well, you can actually hit this at 0 millisecond.
Yeah, I've seen this. It's pretty impressive. You turn on local cache for these items, and you start refreshing, and suddenly that number drops down to zero.
Okay.
Because all that, so a couple of benefits with the local cache. Not only is that stored locally to the machine, but because it's local to the machine and memory, you actually don't have to pay the serialization costs as well. Right?
That is correct. So the 0 millisecond, you know, gains are true 0 milliseconds because there's absolutely no serialization costs
yep.
being paid. In this case, of course, you have to do a network hop, so you're doing a serialization cost, which increased to about, you know, the 5 millisecond that you would see. So with that, you know, it's usually 5 milliseconds, 10 is the worst case you've seen so far. So this is, what we like to call the reference data,
yep.
which is you take your SQL, Azure, XStore, or for that matter, this could be any other store,
yep.
a file, or even a remote store. The best way to, you know, get performance and reduce the pressure on the data here is to put a distributed cache in
yep.
between. And that's where our fabric caching starts, you know, adding value very quickly to help you scale up your application.
And from a, you know, we don't necessarily need to write any code here, but from a code perspective, it's actually not that complex, right? Because whenever if I want to leverage this caching tier, I can just simply, whenever I do a, you know, I'm trying to get, let's say, product catalog information, I can first just check that cache to see if it exists.
Exactly.
If it doesn't exist, go off to SQL Azure, grab what I need to grab, and then put it into the cache so that the next time I make that call, it's, you know, it's available for me to use. So
correct.
It doesn't require a whole lot of changes to my code. Or
exactly. And if you're familiar with programming XStore, you know, the same key value pairs that you're used to keeping
yep.
information in XStore is the same construct that the cache provides. So
yep.
you have full control over what you keep in there, how you expire it, and of course we provide some regular policies like release, recently used, but then you have full control over what gets stored here,
yep.
and the hop to the XStore or SQL Azure or a third-party store is pretty clear from that point onwards.
And it occurs to me, maybe this you'll get to this in another scenario too, but there's going to be cases where I may have some data stored in Windows Azure table storage, maybe some data in SQL Azure, maybe even some data, you know, from an OData service somewhere else and so forth, and
right.
kind of aggregating and, you know, doing some sort of compute on top of that requires a lot of cycles.
Right.
If I calculate that once, store it in my cache, then I don't have to continue to go through that process.
Really. And that's the, you know, it feeds in really well into the third scenario that
okay.
I'm not talking
great.
About, which is, what, of course, these are not marketing terms, and some of the marketing was kind of risks, but what I like to call the aggregate data scenario, which
okay.
is where you need to aggregate data from multiple disparate sources and then provide a consistent view to your consumers.
Mm-hmm.
The classic case is I have a bunch of data that I want to store in SQL Azure. I have some storage that I want to store in XStore, whether it's table storage or blob storage, it doesn't matter. Or, you know, you could just be getting a feed from the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
This could be on-premises, or this could be, hey, I want to get some movie information from
yep.
Netflix. I want to get any OData feed as an example. Or I'm trying to access some information from my on-premises, from a hybrid application. One of the great benefits is that instead of reading from multiple different sources and then, you know, having logic to manage each source, you can actually consolidate all this information into one consistent view of the world in the cache.
Yep.
And think of this cache being your normalized state for aggregated data.
Yep.
And you can, you know, write simple logic to be able to periodically read and aggregate storage
mm-hmm.
From any of these sources. And then your compute tier, you know, this could be web or workers, or for that matter, you know, you could just have another OData feed for your customers.
Yep.
Your compute just has to deal with the logic of reading from one data source,
yeah.
as opposed to having adapters and logic for per data source and the compute logic changing. The compute logic always just goes against cache, which is the aggregated data store in this
yeah.
case, and you never have to worry about programming more. So the minute you want to add a fourth source, or fifth source in this case, you can add a new data source without ever affecting your compute tier, because it has no knowledge. Yeah, fabric caching provides a consistent view to that data source.
Okay.
So that's what I like to call the third bucket of scenarios, which is you want to aggregate data and serve it or compute it before you had to go hit each store separately. Now you can actually read it, keep it in cache. You get the benefits of caching, which is no pressure on the data tiers, as well as some normalization before you can start working on the data.
And even in the scenario, I can end up using local cache up in my compute tier, make those benefit, get that benefit, et cetera. So that's great.
So it kind of keeps adding up. I mean, this can be, you know, you can always use session state and output cache for this. You can get local cache. And those values are benefits to keep it growing. So once you've learned, you know, the basics of session state and local caching and how you program the reference data,
Yep. You
can use this in different combinations to get a lot of benefits to speed up your application. So
this is
one of our critical patterns to go build a highly performant or a highly scalable web application, where you can extend that to not just web applications, but any applications, whether they are hybrid, on-premises, and cloud, or they're purely in Azure. But you can get a lot of cost benefits and speed benefits by using the cache tier.
So a couple questions. Unless you have any more of these scenarios, let's talk about, you know, the caching service as, you know, it progresses. So with the CTP, we have a, you know, caching service that runs up in the cloud, uses the same programming API, you know, same APIs and assemblies that Windows Server Network Caching does. So NetTCP port 22233. What's going to be coming over the next, you know, three, four, five, six months and so forth as we move towards commercial availability of
service? Now that I'm going to draw this green box, let me go deeper into one of these boxes and then explain, you know, what's inside and what's coming next.
Okay, great.
Based on that. So one of the things, you know, I always draw the App Fabric caching as one big box as opposed to drawing a bunch of mini boxes that says, hey, this is how you actually have caching on premises today.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you would typically stand up a cluster of machines and create a App Fabric cache cluster out of that.
Right.
And then, you know, then as an IT pro, you would have to manage this yourself.
Yeah.
And you're spending time in figuring out what my HA policy would be, you know, so high availability,
yep,
what my config needs to be, what my capacity plan needs to be. In Azure, what we've done is, and that's where we spend bulk of our time getting the CTP release out, was we completely abstracted this pain from you and said, this is something that Azure will offer as a platform service. And what you have to worry about is just consuming this endpoint. So bulk of the features today, you know, from the endpoint perspective, seem to be, hey, I can just use a cache as an endpoint.
Yep.
Because we were spending a lot of time in getting this architecture right for you, so you never have to worry about configuring the cache clusters or having to spend a lot of IT pro time in managing these. So today, you just get an endpoint, and this endpoint is secured using ACS.
Yep.
So
great. I'm glad you brought that up. Yes.
Yeah, that's one of the things that, you know, you can, if you already started using App Fabric, other services like ACS, it's a lot of synergy in using ACS, and then using that to secure your cache as well.
So when I connect to the endpoint, I've got an ACS token that I present to the cache service, and it uses that in order to authenticate me.
Okay.
So
today, at CDP, we're just announcing the fact that, you know, you can sign up. So there's basically some basic sign-up experience, which completely abstracts this part of the problem for you.
Yep.
And then you get an endpoint with an ACS token that you can secure,
Yep. And
you can start using it. There are not a whole lot of other knobs that you need to worry about or using. Now, our goal is that we're going to start enhancing this part with a lot of config and a lot of options that you can start using. A couple of things that we're thinking about at this point are, we give you a variable cache size. So today we just give you a fixed cache size and we manage it for you. So that's one of the big enhancements plan, which is you get to decide whether I want 256 megs, a gig of cache.
Yep.
So that's one of the big things. A couple of other things that we're thinking is, if you are used to programming with the Windows Server App Fabric cache today, you are probably used to some features like notifications,
Yep. Which
is when my cache expires, I get notified that, you know, this cache is no longer fresh, so you can go refresh it yourself. So this capability is not in CDP today, but this is definitely on the roadmap that we have notifications as well. One of the other things that we talked about is this cache at CDP today is a distributed cache. Today it's not a highly available cache, which is, we do partition it and we do store it, but there's a possibility of, you know, a node going down and some part of your cache getting invalidated. So having, you know, high availability of the cache itself being, you know, an option that you get to pick from. Say, if it's this data that you really care about, mm-hmm. and you don't want to keep rebuilding if and when a piece of your cache might go down, we will, you know, have an option for you to turn on high availability.
Right.
So with SHA, that's one of the other things that you get. So like this, and these are things that, you know, you as a developer or an app owner would care about configuring or deciding upon to use. But while we're innovating on this vector, we still want to make sure that we never have to expose the pain of or expose the overhead in managing the cache environment yourself. That will always be managed for you. And we'll, you know, depending on what latencies we get, we might also start getting into what we like to call the dedicated cache machines. Think of this as, you know, a higher level of isolation. So, of course, this is a multi-tenant shared service today, and we understand that a class of our users would like to have a dedicated cache as opposed to having a shared cache. And that's one of the other things that we're exploring, that we give you an isolation option. Of course, it'll be priced higher than the other one, which is you can switch between using a shared infrastructure,
yeah.
or you can have a dedicated infrastructure like this, still managed, so you don't have to pay the cost of doing this. But just with the flip of a switch of saying, I want isolated or not isolated,
right.
you can get the cable.
So I that way my cache is running on my own hardware. It's not, you know, in a multi-tenant environment. I'm not sharing those resources with someone else.
Correct. And so you have full control over, yeah. you know, the performance you're going to get out of the box, as well as that data is not shared with anyone else ever. So these are some of the things that we're thinking that, you know, first will be, you know, make sure we have full parity,
yep.
or as close as parity we can get with our on-premises offering. And then there are a couple of things which are unique to the Azure world of, you know, service enhancements.
Yep.
Of course, we're looking at other things like geo-replication
yep.
or high availability
awesome.
Across data centers. Of course, these are no time frames for this.
Sure.
Definitely the roadmap. And these are some things which are unique to Azure, and we'll have Azure Plus enhancements as well. So.
Yeah. So a couple of questions along with that then as well. So mm-hmm. what about, over time, REST endpoint on the caching service?
That's been a frequently asked question. So definitely. Today, you know, this is with WCF only. So you basically use WCF programming to be able to access this. But definitely, interop is very high on our priority
right.
list. And we want to make sure that this endpoint can not just call from ASP.NET, but you have a PHP app, you're a Ruby on Rails guy.
Yep.
For that matter, any application, we will abstract the same endpoint and provide this as a REST endpoint for you to start consuming the services. So that you're not, it's great if you're using the .NET platform.
Yep.
This is built on a .NET platform, but if you want to consume it from a heterogeneous application, this REST endpoint will enable you to do that. So actually, in terms of priority, that's pretty high up on the list. No comments on when it can be
right.
made available, but it's definitely on the roadmap.
Let me ask you one other question then, too, see if I can get you to talk about
yeah,
it. So one thing, like, as I'm building out this cache and I'm building an app running in Windows Azure, I'll want to have affinity between my app running in Windows Azure and the cache. Certainly, I can probably build it in the same data centers, but the concept of an affinity group between my web roles and my database and my cache, is that something that, you know, might be something that I can
think about? So it's interesting, you know, because we give you control and let you pick and choose what services you want,
mm-hmm.
Definitely cache is something that you always would want to co-locate to your compute tier.
Right.
Because otherwise you don't get the latency benefits. However, your database can actually be in a separate data center.
Good point.
And the third scenario that we talk about, data aggregation, is a classic case of aggregating data from there.
Yeah.
Now, we still understand that, you know, once you start having a lot of these different services like caching, SQL Azure, and XStore, and, you know,
yeah.
the goal of, you know, with Microsoft Azure offering is that we start offering a lot of these services. And at that point, you would need a higher level composition model to be able to pull these all together.
Mm-hmm.
So while we would recommend having an affinity group with your compute tier, but having a full flexibility of how all these pieces get deployed together is the other investment that AppFabric makes with the composition model to be able to deploy and manage multiple of these services together.
Right.
And, you know, as we talked about this at PDC, that's another big area of investment from AppFabric that we're working on to make a much higher level of composition model to enable composition of multiple Azure and non-Azure services, which helps you solve the affinity group problem, which helps you solve the common deployment problem, Because here today, you still have to go deploy a cache separately.
Correct,
anyway.
Yeah.
So some of those may not necessarily, might not be attempting in the cache space, because there's some use cases, but it's definitely a strong use case for the composition model to go solve that.
Right. Well, that just opened up a whole other can of worms and topic that we can talk about some other time. So
definitely. So yeah, so I'm pretty excited about what we made available at PDCs, and
great.
People should just start using the ASP.NET session state thing out of box. And once they see the benefits and the value of using cache data, the value of using it for the reference data on aggregator just becomes apparent.
So that's great. Well, hey, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I love talking about this. So,
excellent. Great work.
Thanks, Wade.